as we've just done, and to partake of the Lord's Supper and remember what Christ has done for us. A wonderful way to spend time on this earth, isn't it? And we look forward to being able to spend eternity in similar pursuits. Thank you for being here today, especially if you're visiting with us. We're so glad that we can worship our God this morning. Let me ask you something. Is there something that you're afraid of doing in this life, especially as it relates to your spiritual life, service to the Lord? Courage is doing what it is that you're afraid to do. And I want to talk to you this morning about taking courage to do the things that are not maybe in your comfort zone, things that you are afraid of doing, but that nonetheless need to be done and that God expects you to do. It was Eddie Rickenbacker who said that there can be no courage unless you're scared. You know, God doesn't expect us to go through life not realizing that there are problems that we might face, and we might come into conflict, and we might get hurt spiritually, physically, or a lot of other ways. And we need to have probably a healthy concern and respect for that. But that's where courage comes in, to go ahead and do what it is that God wants us to do, regardless of what the consequences might be in this life. It was John Wayne who said, courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway. I like that. Just being scared to death, but saddling up anyway. And so, we're afraid, maybe, to do certain things. We're afraid to teach our neighbors about Jesus. I don't know why we are, but I think a lot of us are. Afraid of getting into that home Bible study. Maybe we're afraid we can't answer a question. Maybe we're afraid we won't tell the gospel story like it deserves to be told. Maybe we're just afraid of the conversation itself. Maybe we're afraid that our neighbors won't think as much of us or they'll get mad at us. And then some of us are afraid to teach a Bible class when we have the ability and opportunity to do that. I think there are some folks, ladies especially, who are afraid to show hospitality, to have people into their homes because maybe your home's not all that you think it should be, and maybe you don't clean as well as somebody else or fix dessert as well as somebody else, and so you're afraid to have to show hospitality, to serve people in that way. Maybe there are people who are afraid to go up to visitors and greet them here in our assemblies on Sunday morning. Maybe you're afraid to rebuke a brother who's in sin, who is doing something, maybe he's a friend of yours, close friend, but he's doing something he ought not to do, and you're afraid to point that out to him, maybe because you're afraid of his reaction or losing a friendship or whatever it might be. Then I think there are those who are just afraid to stand up for the Lord. Let it be known what their convictions are, whether in conversations at the workplace or in school or even in the family, to stand up for the Lord, to take His cause and say, here's what we need to be doing. Here's what's right, because the Lord has said so. Courage isn't something that just happens. We think that there are people that are courageous just naturally, and then there are people that are cowards just naturally, and there may be something to that, but I want to tell you what, if you're courageous, it's because you've chosen to be courageous. You have taken courage. And I like this phrase, taking courage, taking courage. We have to take it. We have to seize it. And in part, God will help us get it. He will, in a sense, give it to us, as we'll see today in the lesson. But we have to take it. It's not going to happen. We're not going to get courage just by sitting around wishing that we had it. We're going to have to take it and take it to do the things that we are afraid of doing. And so this morning, I want you to think about some things, some areas in which it takes courage. It takes courage to face our adversaries in conflict, and especially when we think about those who disagree with us about spiritual things, who don't maybe have the truth on what the Bible has to say about a number of things. It takes courage. In Deuteronomy chapter 31, Israel was about to enter into the promised land. The song that we just sang comes from this verse and a similar passage in Joshua that we'll look at in a little bit. But Israel was about to enter the promised land. Moses was about to die. But before he does, he wants to give both Israel and Joshua, his successor, he wants to give them courage. He wants to encourage them. You notice the word courage and encourage. To encourage somebody is to impart courage to them. And so Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 1. I'm going to read this several verses here. Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel. And he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I can no longer go out and come in. Also the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross over this Jordan. The Lord your God himself crosses over before you. He will destroy these nations from before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua himself crosses over before you, just as the Lord has said. And the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and their land, and he will destroy them. The Lord will give them over to you, that you may do to them according to every commandment which I have commanded you. Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them, for the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. And Moses called Joshua and said to him, in the sight of all Israel, be strong and of good courage, for you must go with this people to the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, he is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Do not fear nor be dismayed. So Moses speaks these words to the children of Israel and to Joshua. And he's telling them, you're going to go and take this land. God's promised you this land. And there are going to be enemies in this land. And you're going to run into fortified cities and all sorts of people that are going to come against you. But you be courageous and you go and take the land as God has told you to do. And you inherit this great promise that he has given to you, this promise of this land to the nation of Israel. I don't know the tone of Moses' voice as he spoke these words. But I expect that it would have been something like a pretty good speech of a football coach at halftime. And by the time you got finished listening to what Moses had to say here, you'd be fired up. You'd be fired up. And you'd have this attitude, let's go. We can do it. We can do it. We've been encouraged in this way. And it doesn't matter who the adversaries are. It doesn't matter how great the fortified cities may be in the land of promise or how vast the armies might be. God is going to go with us. We're going to take courage and we are going to go against these adversaries. And because he will fight for us and he will give us the victory, we're going to conquer our foes. You see, when our enemies are bigger and mightier and more powerful than we are, courage comes because God is always bigger and mightier and more powerful than our adversaries. And if he is with us in whatever the endeavor is, again, whether it's teaching our neighbor or teaching a Bible class or showing hospitality or standing up for him in our families, whatever the endeavor is, if he is with us, we can have the victory. We will have the victory if we'll just follow his will. It is vital that we rely on him then. That's really the main message that I get out of Deuteronomy chapter 31. Rely on the Lord. Trust in his power and his strength. And whatever it is that you're facing, if you recognize that he is with you, you can gain the victory through him. So the psalmist will say in Psalm 27 and verse 12, do not deliver me to the will of my adversaries. For false witnesses have risen against me, and such as breathe out violence. I would have lost heart, which is as if to say, I would have lost courage. The psalmist says, I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he will strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. And so here's the key to anything that we're facing, any adversary that we're going up against, whether it's real or imaginary, or whether it's physical or spiritual, whatever it might be, here's the key. Rely on the Lord. Wait on the Lord. You can have courage if the Lord is with you. This reality is rehearsed over and over again for us throughout the Old Testament scriptures and into the New Testament. When people were with God and God was with them, they could face anything, they could accomplish anything that God wanted them to do. And there were some frightening experiences that his people went through at times. But still, because he was with them, they could accomplish. We need courage to face our adversaries in conflict. We need courage to keep God's commands as well. Over in Joshua chapter 1, much of what Moses said to Israel is repeated here as God speaks to Joshua. Joshua chapter 1 and verse 6, Joshua is told to be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and you will have good success. I want you to notice that God is telling Joshua to be courageous to keep the commands. He's going to tell him to be courageous as far as being a leader of the people going in to conquer the land as well. But in these verses, he's saying be courageous to keep the commands. You realize it takes courage to do what God says do? It does, doesn't it? It takes courage, and all of the things we've talked about so far, and I've just mentioned a smattering of things that we need courage to face and some things that we sometimes fear in our lives. And a lot of those things that we've already talked about, like showing hospitality and teaching our neighbors and teaching Bible classes and so on and so forth, a lot of those things are commandments of God, aren't they? It takes courage to keep all of the commandments of God. Because His ways are not our ways. And His way of seeing things and His what He wants us to do is not necessarily what would be according to our natural will. We can look through the Bible from beginning to end and see repeatedly that He's wanting us to do things that we're just afraid to do. See, the husband in that home relationship takes courage to be the husband that God wants you to be. To show tenderness to the wife. To sacrifice yourself. Well, what if she doesn't love me back after I, give myself totally into this and buy in, as we say nowadays, and give myself completely to being a self-sacrificial husband like the Lord instructs me to, and then she doesn't repay in kind, and then here I am, look, completely giving myself to somebody who doesn't. It takes courage to go ahead and do what God said do, doesn't it? It takes courage to go ahead and do what God said do. I was talking about the hospitality thing earlier. Maybe your house you think isn't nice, or you can't cook as well as someone else or whatever. And so what God said to do this, it takes courage to go ahead and do it. And on we could go. The children of Israel were told in Joshua chapter 23 at the end of the book of Joshua that they too needed to take courage to keep the law of God. In Joshua chapter 23 and verse 6, Joshua says, "Therefore be very courageous to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, lest you turn aside from it to the right hand or the left." Well, I see this is what it's telling me to do, but that just looks kind of difficult, and I'm just kind of afraid to do that, so I just think I'll go over here to the right or over here to the left. Joshua says you've got to have courage to do what it is that God has told you in the book of the law to do. "Unless you go among these nations, these who remain among you, you shall not make mention of the name of their gods, nor cause anyone to swear by them. You shall not serve them or bow down to them, but you shall hold fast to the Lord your God, as you have done to this day." So what Joshua is telling the children of Israel is, you've got to be faithful to God. And it may be that as you look around at the gods of the land, that maybe the other people seem more prosperous or their lives seem more pleasurable. And certainly as we look around in America today, we can find people that are leading lives that, that seems like a lot more fun, lifestyles of the rich and famous and so on and so forth. And maybe it would be, more pleasurable to engage in this kind of activity or that kind of activity. But if I stay on this course, if I stay on God's course, I'm not going to participate in that. I'm not going to participate in that. It takes courage to say to the world around us, "No, we're not going to do what you're doing. We're not going to have the attitudes that you're having. We're going to do as God has said." It takes courage to keep God's commands. It takes courage to live as a Christian before others, doesn't it? I want to say that moral courage to keep the commands of God is different than battlefield courage. Moral courage involves doing what God says, even though the whole world is saying, do something else. And even though what God says might not make sense to you. In Matthew chapter 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus had instructed in verses 39 and following, not to resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. If someone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. Whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Now I want to tell you what, when you're slapped on one cheek and you turn the other cheek, that doesn't look like courage to the world. But it is. When you let somebody defraud you, as Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 7, where there are suits among brethren, lawsuits among brethren, and Paul says, it's an utter failure for you that you go to law against one another. Why do you not rather accept the wrong? Why do you not rather let yourself be cheated? That doesn't look like courage, but it is. See, what the world counts as courage on the battlefield is not necessarily what moral courage is. It was Mark Twain who said that it's a curious thing that physical courage should be so common in the world and moral courage so rare. We admire physical courage on the battlefield. We admire what our troops do when they go into a situation where they're being fired at and bombs are being dropped and all that sort of thing. But it takes a lot more courage, I believe, to be courageous morally. And as we said, that's what it means to live as a Christian. It takes moral courage to live as a Christian. Sometimes the most difficult thing to do is to just stand your ground as a Christian around people that you see every day, to do the simple things that God is asking you to do. Too many of us fall prey to fear of an attack. And so we don't stand up and we don't do and we don't say what we know God wants us to do and say. We're afraid of an attack, and sometimes an attack that never comes. I read an interesting story not long ago about a fellow, the late Earl J. Fleming, who was an Alaska state biologist. He went about investigating objectively whether or not brown bears really attack humans or not. Grizzly bears, of course, have quite a reputation for that, but brown bears also at one time had a reputation for attacking humans. And the way Fleming did his study was that when he encountered a bear, a brown bear in the wilderness, he neither ran from it nor shot at it. He just stood his ground. At the end of his unique study, he had encountered 81 brown bears. And although several staged mock attacks, not one actually attacked him. I believe if we'll stand in this world, God with us, that we'll find that the attacks we fear are not so bad after all. And even if it comes, you'll be attacked for standing for what is right. Joseph of Arimathea, in Mark chapter 15, is well known as the rich man who gave Jesus, if you will, his tomb to be buried in. Joseph of Arimathea in Mark 15 and verse 43 was a prominent member of the council. He was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, and it says he took courage. Coming and taking courage, he went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. You know why he had to take courage to do that? Well, because he was a prominent member of the council. Up until this point, he hadn't admitted his faith in Jesus. He hadn't admitted publicly a connection with Christ. If you look at John's record of this in John 19 and verse 38, Joseph of Arimathea was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews. And now he takes courage. I wonder what it was like for him to sit on that high council of the Jews all of that time during Jesus' public ministry, perhaps, knowing at some point even perhaps that the Jewish council was plotting to kill Jesus and not really being able to to admit his own affinity and belief in and love for the Christ. I'm sure he feared reprisal. Maybe he feared being kicked off the council. But finally and at last, after the crucifixion of Christ, he takes courage. There were other people that we run across in the Gospels that never lived up to their beliefs in Christ. Apparently in John 12 and verse 42, there were among the rulers many who believed in him. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess it, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. Let me ask you something. Would they have been put out of the synagogue? Probably. How bad would that have been? What would have meant to them as far as their social standing was concerned? Well, it probably would have been pretty bad if it had happened. Did it happen? Did it happen to these people? No. Would it have happened? Well, we don't know for sure because they never confessed Christ. And there's the thing, there's my point. Until you come out and confess Christ, until you come up and out and stand where you're supposed to stand as a Christian, you don't know if the attacks are real or not. You don't know what's going to happen. What you do know is you haven't done what Jesus wants you to do, to confess His name before men, to stand for Him day by day in your life. We who have been saved, have been saved, that we might seize every opportunity to glorify God. And that involves having the courage to stand for Him at every opportunity. Those who fear doing things because they might suffer as a Christian miss the point of being a Christian. Please pay attention to this. We get to be Christians, not so that we may not suffer, but so that we might suffer to His glory. And the idea that we're going to run away from situations in which we might have to suffer, if that's the prevalent idea in your life, you are not living as a Christian. Listen to Peter's words, and there are actually several verses on this. We won't take the time this morning, but listen to 1 Peter 4 and verse 16. If anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this matter. Excuse me. You need to have the courage to be Christians courageous. What enables courage? What enables courage is caring more about something or someone else than we do about ourselves. One summer morning several years ago, a man by the name of Ray Blankenship was preparing his breakfast. As he sat and gazed out the window, he was looking at a drainage ditch that was overflowing with floodwaters from a recent deluge. And as he watched the water go by, he saw, to his surprise, a young girl being swept along in the current. He knew that just downstream, that ditch went into a bigger culvert and underground and then out into a large raging river. And he knew that if the girl went through that, she would not survive. Immediately he jumped up and ran alongside the ditch until he got even with her and hurled himself into the deep churning water. He surfaced and was able to grab the girl's arm. They tumbled end over end. Within about 3 feet of the yawning culvert, Ray's free hand felt something and he grabbed hold of a rock. And with all of his strength, he just held on, telling himself, hold on till help gets here. By the time help arrived in the form of the local fire department, Ray had managed to pull himself and the girl out to safety. Both were treated for shock, but both survived. In 1989, Ray Blankenship was awarded the Coast Guard's Silver Medal for life-saving. The award is, I guess, fitting for this selfless person who put himself at great risk to save the life of another. What's the rest of the story? Ray Blankenship can't swim. How could you do that? I have a feeling that the man, suddenly, when he looked at that girl being swept along in the stream, in a moment realized that he could try to save her and risk his own life, or he could sit there and watch her drown and never be able to live with himself. When we care more about someone or something else than we do about ourselves, it motivates action and courage that's beyond what we think possible. David, King David, before he was King David, took on Goliath because he had a reason to. Think about 1 Samuel 17 as David comes and faces this giant. The giant that had defied the armies of the living God. He says to him as he approaches David, as he approaches Goliath, he says in 1 Samuel 17 and verse 45, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you, and this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." David didn't care how big the giant was, how many armies there were behind him. Was it a fearful circumstance? It certainly was. But David is going to face it because of the honor of his God and the people of God. People are going to know that there's a God in Israel. That has to be our attitude in this world. People are going to know that there's a God. We're going to stand up for Him. And lastly, what enables courage? Well, we said it at the beginning, we'll say it again here at the end. The presence of God. The presence of God. In Joshua 1 and verse 9, that's what God told Joshua. "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." And when God is with us, we can go anywhere. Anywhere He leads. A little 5-year-old boy was in the kitchen with his mother. She was making supper. She asked him to go into the pantry and get her a can of tomato soup. But he balked at that. He didn't want to go into the pantry alone. He said, "It's dark in there and I'm scared." Well, she asked him again, and he persisted. Finally, the mother said, "It's okay. Go in there and Jesus will be with you." So the little boy walked hesitantly to the door and opened the pantry door and peeked inside and saw it was dark. And started to leave, and then all at once he had an idea. And he went back and he opened the door a crack and looked inside and he said, "Jesus, if you're in there, could you hand me a can of tomato soup?" Jesus was in there. He'll be with us wherever we go. We can't expect Him to do it for us. That's my point there. You can't expect Him to do it for you. He wants you to go and trust that He's there. And He'll help you. Whatever it is. Right now, at this moment, we've talked about courage to do a lot of different kinds of things. But here's what I think. I think there are some here this morning who may need to obey the gospel, who haven't done it just because they haven't taken the courage to do it. And I want to assure you that God's presence will be with you. And if you'll take that step, He'll help you in ways that you can't even imagine right now. Take courage and be a child of God. Name His name. Be baptized in water for the remission of sins. Rise to walk in the newness of life. And God will be with you every step of that way. Please come while we stand and while we sing.